back, everybody, to another episode of Bum in the Bloom, episode 201. It's preview season, folks, and that means we start with the best position in all of fantasy baseball, the catcher position. We'll preview the top 10 in ADP and some later round targets for us on the show and strategy and much, much more. But before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, my friend?
Nothing like ringing in the new year with the catcher preview. Like your year is this. It is, but this might be like your favorite day of the year, and it's just downhill from here in 2025. So happy belated new year to you. I know we did our New Year's resolution episode that dropped on New Year's Day. Hope everyone kind of enjoyed that. That was obviously very off topic, but we are getting back on topic with previews, and we'll do first base next, and off we go, man.
Yep, it's the fun has begun. Like we mentioned on the Patreon, rankings have been dropping. We should have the infield's pretty much covered. Outfield's might be out. I'm still working on that. I'm just gonna throw that out there. But we'll have plenty of rankings coming your way as usual, and other content throughout the season, off season as well, including the wonderful tools and sheets and such that Ryan is putting out there. But yeah, I hope you all had a good New Year's and enjoyed the resolutions episode. And a part of the resolutions episode was the announcement of our second year of the Bubba and the Bloom Listener Leagues, the auction leagues. So if you need a recap on that, they're $50 entries, 15-team NFBC auction formats. Each league will make you get cash prizes for the top three, I believe, in each league. That's a double check. I'm pretty sure it's top three in each league.
It was last year, yeah. Yeah,
okay. So it'll stay the same pretty much there. There'll be an overall prize to be determined by me and Ryan. We'll still talk about that with our accountants and whatnot. Paid Patreon members get first crack at it. It's free Patreon members. If you just sign up to be on the Patreon list, you get the second crack at it. Thus, you have to be a Patreon member one way or another to get into the leagues, free or paid. And we'll keep every 15 signups, we'll start a new league. That's the way it breaks down. And the one caveat, one of us will not be in every league this year. That's just going to be the way it is. We can't be in 1,000 leagues, but we'll be in at least one each. I might do a second because I'm a degenerate.
There we go. January 3rd.
I'm not going to speak for my co-host over here because I know he's, if you listen to the resolutions episode, adding on listener leagues is not going to help his resolutions. So any other thoughts on that one, Ryan?
I got to wait at least 3 days before I start breaking some of these things. Yeah. Now you covered that. The last thing would be these will take place roughly. And again, we covered this all on the resolution show, but if you missed it, these will all take place like late February. And so we're going to spend January kind of getting signups and then organizing the leagues. We'll give you all some options on dates, since we know you guys, some of you have lives outside of fantasy baseball. I'm taking a shot at myself there. And so we know that, not every single night is going to work for you. So we'll give you guys some options. That'll all take place in January. And just let us know. I mean, the way to kind of formally or informally, I guess, say you're interested and want to be in the league is, like Bubba said, the paid Patreon, then free Patreon. If you're interested, and then just message us. Message me or Bubba directly. We'll have a running kind of list of everyone that's involved. Or if you don't have social media, BubbaBloomPod@gmail.com. Just shoot us an email. Say you signed up and you are interested in joining the Listener League, and we'll get you on there.
Yep, easy as that. We're looking forward to year two of this. The NFBC has been working great with us too. Greg and Jeff and company have been awesome. Very, very accommodating to make these happen. And they enjoy having a lot of new faces playing the game on the website, obviously.
Yep.
All right. I think that covers the housekeeping portion of the show. Let's get into catchers. The catchers preview for 2025. The most underappreciated, not talked about enough, but most important position on the field and in your fantasy lineup, the catcher's position. So, Ryan, before we get started on strategy and whatnot, what do you have for us on the board we are looking at if you're on the YouTube page?
Yes, we are. We are bringing back the format that I think worked pretty well last year. So, for the YouTube crowd, for anyone watching the stream, we've got, and this will be a similar format for all the positions, unless you all message us and tell us you hate this format, but Assuming that doesn't happen, we are showing the top 30 at the position by ADP. And for this, we're looking at December ADP across all drafts in the NFBC. So all the players are ordered by their ADP. And then we've got projections color-coded, of course, with by average home runs and stolen bases. So you can see that, and the projections are all from Steamer, which is all publicly available on Fangraphs. So we've got the ADP, we've got the color-coded projections, and I just think it's a nice way to kind of, at a macro level, look at the position as a whole and see some interesting things, which I'll let you take the lead on since you are the catcher guy. See some interesting trends among the player pool in that top 30, where that green starts to turn to red, and you've got some bad numbers. That cliff happens pretty quickly this year.
Happens very quickly this year, and I want to highlight on these boards, as Ryan mentioned, for each position, we also do them like on the recaps on all kinds of things, and it helps when we're doing the pocket of ADP shows because it helps with statistics and this, that, and the other. So it's just a good area, and these stats are the coding's based on the catcher position. Like, you'll see four stolen bases is like average, essentially. So you're good with four steals. Where at another position, obviously not even close. I just wanted to highlight that as we're talking through this. But like Ryan mentioned, it gets ugly rather quickly, I'll say. So I have a lot of thoughts on catcher. So I'll let you have the floor first, Ryan. What's your overall thoughts on attacking the position? You kind of hinted at it based on the way the colors change from happy Christmas to maybe sad Christmas. I don't know how you want to look at it, but what's your thoughts here?
It certainly doesn't seem to be as deep as last year, which I think 2024 was an anomaly for how deep the catcher position was. There's actually a good amount of power, and that goes, if we're looking at like the top 12 at catcher, they're almost all projected for 20 plus home runs, with the exception of JT Realmuto and Tyler Stevenson, who projected for 16 by Steamer. But you can get some decent power. No one is projected for over 30. Cal Raleigh is well deserved the projected home run leader with 30 home runs. The power starts to come at a price, though, once you get into once you start with my guy Will Smith, your guy Logan Ohapi. You don't get the batting average and power outside of like the top four or five. Depending on what you feel about the projections, that number may go up, down one, what have you. But if you want power and batting average, you're going to have to spend it looks like top 80 pick to get there for catcher. And obviously the opportunity cost associated with that, avoiding other positions. But to me, it really falls off probably right after Kieber Ruiz, who's going at ADP roughly 200. After that, you kind of go into this next tier of like Sean Murphy, Connor Wong, Ryan Jeffers. And after Kieber Ruiz, there is nobody projected over 16 home runs for the rest of the player pool for catchers. So that power really drops off kind of after pick 200. And you can probably expand upon that. But that's where I see the big cliff. And then last but not least, stolen bases. Yeah. Nobody projected for over seven steals. That is to be expected at catcher. But I think the biggest thing is JT Realmuto, who had been kind of a stolen base maven, given the two, I think, that he had last year, only projected for seven. William Contreras, the king of the position, only projected for seven. Nobody projected for more than that. So speed is nowhere to be found at catcher in 2025.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. You mentioned the power after pick 200. Only one player predicted a 16 or more, and it's Jeffers. And, you know, we don't expect steals, so I'm not going to bring that up. But even batting average, is only four guys over 250. And you don't expect a ton of batting average from catcher more often than not, because even on the top 200, there's like five or six guys that are going to crush you potentially in batting average. Most are around 250 to 270-ish in that range. So they're not like light years ahead, but it's really bleak later on in the draft. One thing I haven't done, you know, fab leagues yet, and in the draft and holds, I keep changing the way I do it. And I'm in a pitcher heavy approach right now in one league. I want to make sure, and then my next one, I might be more of a get two catchers early type guy, just to see, because when I had Stephen Goodwin on Bench with Bubba, and again, we talked about some of the top OC players, 12 team players, it's a little different, but one trend that a lot of them did, not all, because there's a many ways to win a league, we've said that a million times, but one trend a lot of them did is they wanted two four category catchers. And that stood out in a big way to me, because that's always a discussion point, Ryan. Like a million, everyone will have their angle. Don't take catchers early. Take one catcher early. Take two. And like I said, many ways to win a draft. That's not the issue per se. But to see that a lot of these really elite guys, like, you know, Posma wins the overall this way, and almost every team he won with did this. You just go down the list of guys we talked about on the show. I'd say 80% of them, it felt like, had 2-4 category catchers. I've always been the guy that I want like one, and I'll back it up kind of with a 3 to 3.5 guy. These guys wanted to make sure they got the early dudes, which stood out to me in a big way. And in 12s, it's a little easier because you can finagle like later picks and fab and stuff. Where in a 15, you might be sacrificing a lot more to make that work. That's why I want to try that in a DC. Again, it's not a fab league, but at least give me an idea on how that would play out. But what you mentioned, you hit on the important spots. I just want to kind of give the draft strategy little nugget there, is the dudes that are elite for a reason. That's what we've said. I've always said at catchers, and that's why I've always pounded the William drum even before he wasn't technically elite. I've always liked the Yainar drum. I've had issues with some. We'll talk about them on debate shows probably. Like Adley, I'm still not 100% on. Cal I like, and we'll talk about these, but ADP, like there's a lot of thoughts I have on certain guys, but the elite are the elite for a reason. And unlike other positions where you can maybe pick like 3 or 4 guys, like last year's Neto at shortstop or others, where you're like, okay, I could see them jumping. There's not a lot of catchers you can see jumping after pick 200. There might be a couple, but not many. And they're going to have to run real pure. Like someone's going to have to get hurt almost for them to run to get up there. So it's a different animal in that regard.
That's a good point. A lot of the guys, going outside that top 15 are like older dudes. And we'll talk about some of the like rookies and guys and prospects that we might be interested later on. But those are catchers going like ADP 500 plus. Like outside of your top 15, it's your Sean Murphy, Connor Wong, Ryan Jeffers, Ivan Herrera, maybe the exception.
He
to
could
that.
Be a jump, but yeah, we'll talk. Sorry.
Could
we'll
be
talk.
A jump. But like Joey Bart, Alejandro Kirk, Bo Naylor, Patrick Bay. Like I don't see Jonah Heim. I don't see a lot of ceiling there or paths for a lot of those guys outside the top 15 to enter that top 15. And I think, especially in draft and holds, but a little less so in fab leagues. I know it's easier said than done because you have to fill so many damn positions in these first 200 picks. I think the replacement level looks so bad. And again, the ceiling for a lot of these later catchers doesn't look that great. I think there's a very good case, like you were just saying, to be made to get kind of those 2-4 category catchers. It's going to cost you elsewhere. There's an opportunity cost involved with that. But to me, it makes a lot of sense to try and get your 2 catchers in the top 200.
Yeah, that's why I said I'm going to try to do it. I'm not usually that guy, but it's making more and more sense as the landscape keeps changing. And last thing is, the reason that landscape is also changing, besides the elderly abuse you just mentioned over there, is I've said it a couple years ago, the catcher's positions is almost turning into like running backs in football. There's so many A's and B's catching every day. Like there's a lot of catchers catching like 100-ish games, 100 to 110. There's still a lot of them getting like 80. I guess it's a platoon, basically, is what I'm trying to say, at catcher for a lot of teams. So that separates the bunch as well.
The projections I'm looking at to that point, there are only 3 catchers projected over 600 plate appearances: William Contreras, Adley Rutschman, Salvi Perez. Yainer Diaz and Cal Raleigh are right there. They're just below 600. There are only 10 catchers projected for 500 plus plate appearances. So that kind of goes into what you were talking about. There is a very finite pool of catchers who can actually amass a decent amount of playing time. And I think that has an advantage, if assuming they don't get hurt, that sort of thing, that can have a big advantage getting that playing time over a lot of these, like you said, these running backs, 1A, 1B types, who are only getting in the low 400s in plate appearances. Those extra 150, 175 plate appearances, that can matter a lot, especially times two, if you do that for 2 catcher spots. So.
And then again, now that you mentioned that, I'll add on to what happened in 2024, since we're kind of doing the whole process here. There was 5 catchers over 600 plate appearances. Now, tell me if these names rate highly going into 2025. William Contreras, Salvador Perez, Adley Rutschman, Cal Raleigh, Yainer Diaz. That's the top 5 off the board right now. And they're the only 5 that got 600 plate appearances. And if you go farther than that, there were only 4 that got over 500. So it drops quickly, to echo the point of what took place, and that's Will Smith, Langoliers, Ohapi, Stevenson. So like you have these elite guys and they're getting drafted early for a reason. So I know we're banging it maybe home too hard, but it just, it stands out when the top five in plate appearances last year are the top five off the board right now. There's something going on there.
And to bang it even more, phrasing, a lot of these top guys have done it before and continue to do it. I think there's a, I don't want to say a misnomer out there. There's a narrative that catchers are riskier than other positions because they get banged up, that, you know, nicks and scratches and all that sort of stuff. That does happen, but there is a very, I think, consistent pool of playing time near the top for catcher. And there has been research out there that catcher really from a year to year consistency standpoint is no less or more or less consistent than other positions. So I don't take that theory that I wait on catchers because they're all going to get hurt. I don't subscribe to that.
Yeah, if you have that theory, then wait on pitchers too.
Just draft shortstops.
Pretty much draft the middle infield and call it a day. All right, I think we run around in circles enough there, but hopefully the point got brought home of why the position is the way it is, I guess. Let's start talking about that top 10 and ADP, Ryan. We'll kick it off with the GOAT, Sir William, King William, however you want to say it, the best catcher in baseball. William Contreras with an ADP of 25 right now. Coming in with a projection, this is for a catcher, 276, 25, and 7. So, yes, you have to pay the piper. He's a top two round pick essentially in 15. He's a 2-3 turn in 12s, but the dude has literally been the best catcher in baseball for two straight years.
Yeah, and it's not all that close. And yes, King William is the king. I think the question, I mean, not to just like, yeah, he's really good. We can get that out of the way. The question is the price, right? Because you are, and to go away from just catchers here, like the players going around William Contreras in drafts right now is like Freddie Freeman, Ronald Acuna, Trey Turner, Jazz Chisholm, Logan Gilbert, Ketel Marte, if you want to go early at an elite second baseman. It's the guys going around William Contreras. I have not pulled the trigger on William Contreras yet. I think the price is, like, we haven't had a top two round catcher in
it's crazy.
A long ass time. So I think that's the question we need to kind of ask ourselves. Yes, he's the best at the position, but are you willing to miss out on some of those other names that I just mentioned to get William Contreras and get that advantage at catcher? I haven't yet. Not to say it's a bad strategy or anything, but just some of those other options are a little more appealing to me.
Yeah, and the crazy part, he's gone as high as 20 and as low as 32, so it's not like he's falling a ton. You have to take him.
Yeah.
Like, he's in that second round window. That's where you're getting him. And like to give a, and again, we both say he's great. If you want to take him, it's probably not the worst pick, obviously.
Sure.
Yeah. And I kind of want to, that's one of the guys I kind of want to target. I have no shares and I want to see how that build looks essentially. But that's the beauty of DCs, is see how these things come together. I think one thing that, if I want to give a justification for the pick, is that batting average you're getting is better than a lot of the guys you mentioned right there. Not a lot, like Freeman's good, but there's the batting average starts to slowly creep down, and he's still one of the elite batting average guys, which is something we've talked about a lot on some recap shows. The power is still pretty good. Steals for a catcher's good. I know for a catcher, it's bad saying that, but this is as close to a five category catcher as you're going to find. And that for me will justify the pick. And again, I agree. It seems really rich for what you're passing on. I have not done it. Again, neither have you. But to try to give the other angle of why this is probably a good pick, if you are attacking catcher, this dude is elite. And if you put just the stat line next to a ton of outfielder, like outfielder one, low ones and twos, he's pretty darn close outside of maybe steals. And that gives the bump you're looking for. So I just want to give that push as well.
679 plate appearances for King William last year. That makes that average count too, right? The more at bats you get of that average, the more it helps your standing. So yes, he is the king. We have crowned him.
We have crowned him. Crown him. All right. The second catcher off the board, ADP of 57, Yainar Diaz, a dude that struggled a ton in the first half last year. People were like, "What are we doing? What are we doing?" And I just said, "Give the Braveheart meme hold." And things worked really well in the second half. Young player, and there's really not any major reports of an injury or anything. I kept looking, just kind of scuffled a bit, but finished very strong, Ryan, with 16 homers, two steals, and a 299 batting average after hitting 282 basically in his rookie year. So it was a high average, but not a complete fluke. Like, it'll regress, but not a complete fluke. So what's your thoughts on Yiner?
And it should be in a lineup. Maybe we're dating ourselves by pre-recording this by a couple of days, but should still be in a Houston lineup that is not quite as good as last year, but still pretty solid. And so if you get 600 plus plate appearances with that great batting average, like you're hitting your runs in RBI, right? It was 84 RBI for Yiner Diaz last year, 70 runs. I think that's a big part of why Yiner Diaz is number two. I originally, in my rankings, had Yiner Diaz below Adley Rutschman. I think I am changing that.
Good call, sir. Good call. Man, look at this. I love hearing this. After all the Discord conversation, this is good to hear.
Hey, people smarter than me telling me that, not telling me I'm wrong, but making really good cases against Adley, and we'll get to that one next. So I don't really see too much of a flaw in Yiner Diaz's game. The one thing you could point to is the ground ball fly ball for Yiner Diaz. He's an extreme ground ball hitter, only a 27% fly ball rate. I think that puts a pretty firm cap on Yiner Diaz's power.
Agreed.
But it's also a double-edged sword. That's why he gets the very good batting average. So if we just say, oh, if Yiner Diaz hit more fly balls, like, yeah, he'd hit more home runs, but he's not going to hit in the 280s again, you know, without that ground ball line drive stroke. So that's kind of who he is. And he is, yes, a class below the king, but Yiner Diaz, I think, is a firm number two for me at catcher.
And again, 20 plus home runs at catcher is still very good. We don't need 20. They can't all be Cal Raleigh, as you mentioned before. I'll take the batting average in that regard. And it's a fun conversation to be had, because it's like it's over a 30 pick difference between William. And William's still light years ahead of him. That's why they're 30 pick difference. But if you want to wait two rounds and go get Yiner as your catcher one, it's a fun conversation. Like, you're not going to probably get the steals, but a lot of other things will be in line. And you mentioned the team context. Yeah, it's a different Astros team without Tucker, but potentially Yiner is still hitting fifth in this order with Altuve, Paredes, Yordan, and Walker in front of him. Like, that's a pretty nice situation to be in. Like you mentioned, still not a bad team. So love me some Yiner Diaz as well. All right. Adley Rutschman, ADP of 64, third catcher off the board, projected for 261, 20 homers and two stolen bases. A lot of people like Adley Rutschman, and I think he's probably a great human being. I think he's a very good catcher, but I'm happy to hear you change your mind, and I'm curious to see why you might be changing your mind, Ryan, after 19 home runs and a 250 batting average in 2024.
Oregon State boy. Of course he's a good human being, just down the road in Corvallis. It is interesting to look at this projection right in front of us and see basically the same line with Yiner, and ADP is basically the same line with just 20 with 20 points lower in batting average. I mean, that is the, I guess, deficiency with Adley. Originally, why I had Adley second in the catcher rankings on our Patreon is the first half, second half. I lean more towards the first half of what we saw with Adley Rutschman, which was elite, to be honest. It was a 294 batting average. It was 15 home runs. And then there was, you know, that famous hit by a foul tip on his hand in late June and never looked the same. So the two sides to that coin is like, do you just say that was the reason behind Adley Rutschman's second half? Honestly, disaster. The dude hit 194 with four home runs in the second half. Like, that is terrible. But it did just come out. I mentioned this on an earlier show. I forget his name is escaping me. The MLB.com beat reporter for the Orioles kind of did an interview with Baltimore management, and they basically said the injury was not a reason for the second half slide. It was more Adley just kind of got tired and fatigued. And I don't know how much to stock to put in that, but I think if you are totally discounting and throw away that second half because of injury, I think that might be bad process. So all that to say, I think Adley Rutschman has the highest ceiling of any catcher. I think if you told me right now that William Contreras is not the number one catcher by the end of the season, my pick would be Adley Rutschman, because we have seen that ceiling in spurts. You have the prospect pedigree. Like, I think he could be the best catcher out there, but I don't know if it all comes together this year.
All righty. I love the sounds of that. You actually nailed most of my thoughts on that. I wonder how you figured that out. smart people out there, for sure. and it wasn't me, because he would have said Bubba, smart people, other people in the Discord. But yeah, again, nothing against Adley, but if we're talking about the players going right in front of him or even the ones going right after him, I don't see the appeal to me. And I'm with you. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he proved both of us wrong. That is a realistic situation. But let's just say I wouldn't be shocked if I would be surprised. So if that makes any sense, I think he's a very good fit catcher, but I don't know if the power is really there. I really don't. And I know our buddy Michael Cicchini on the Patreon, he's mentioned the powers to metrics and whatnot, how the differences were and this, that, and the other. So it could be wrong, but I just don't think it's there. So I'm a anti-Adley for now in the early catcher situation, and I'd rather pay up. Or honestly, Salvador Perez is the fourth catcher off the board with an ADP of 72. And this one's always terrifying because the dude's – he's getting up there in age. It feels like he's playing forever. He's 34 now, so he kind of is. But he's been playing since 2011, for crying out loud, with the Royals, not to mention other leagues. But coming off 27 home runs, that's his one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight straight season with at least 21 home runs, not counting 2020. He hit 271, which is probably, he's done that before, but not very often. The RBI is 104. Plate discipline improved, which was great to see. And he's got a projection of 260 with 26 home runs. And again, it's pretty much him and Raleigh are the guys I can trust yearly to hit bombs. So what's your thoughts on Salvador?
Honestly, a pretty boring player to cover because I think we know what we're going to get. The thing but in the back of my head, kind of the anti-Adley, is what does the ceiling look like? Is like when, at some point, my man is going to start to fall apart, yeah. Salvador Perez. I mean, this is his age 35 season. Don't get me wrong, there is no sign of it happening. When you look at the skills and everything that you just mentioned, Bubba, there is no sign of it happening. He's a volume machine. He gets nicked up all the time, but continues to play. But at some point, it's going to fall once you go into your late 30s, whatever. So it's just, when is that? I don't think it's this year. So I'm fine taking Salvi, even, you know, a round or two after Yiner Diaz,
yep,
or a round after Adley. And there's a big, just looking at catcher as a whole after this, is a big cliff after Salvador Perez. I think there's a firm top four, depending on how well you like Cal Raleigh, Wilson Contreras. I think there's a big production, and the projections kind of bear that out. There is a big projection and production gap after these top four.
Yep, no, that's very, very fair. I can see a lot of things changing here, but like you said, I think we know who Salvador is. As long as he doesn't just fall off the map, you're going to have a pretty, pretty productive season that you're not going to worry about there. Cal Raleigh, this is one we're going to talk about at a later date and time, even deeper, of course. But the big dumper, ADP of 80, projected for 223, 30 homers, 4 steals. He's hit 220, 232, 211, and 180 in all four seasons he's played. But he's hit 27 or more home runs in 3 straight years, back-to-back 30-plus home run seasons, which is tremendous for a catcher, as you mentioned. Still young, which is good. What's your thoughts on your favorite team's catcher?
I'm amazed he had 100 RBI last year in the Seattle.
Yeah, I know the Mariners scored 100 runs last year.
I know. And he only had 220. Like, how do you?
That's insane.
To me, that actually kind of says, like, I don't know if that RBI total will repeat. Maybe the Mariners lineup's a little bit better next year. I don't know. But that's kind of hard to hit 220 and drive in 100 runs, especially on that team in that park. So I don't know. Cal Raleigh, I'm just kind of lukewarm on. I will take Wilson Contreras over him. I would rather go in, we're not in 18 leagues, but I'd take the 8 pick cost associated with Salvador Perez and take Salvi Perez over Cal Raleigh. I just think, yes, the power is legit. Like you said, back-to-back 30 home run seasons, has led the position in home runs for 3 straight years, but the batting average scares me. The lineup scares me. And so Cal Raleigh, I think you can kind of pencil this projection in and it comes out just fine. But I'm probably not taking Raleigh much this year.
And I'll save the punchline for later, but I've used it on the show before, and you'll know who I'm talking about. If I want Cal Raleigh's potential, there's a guy I'll take later in this draft with the same batting average, essentially. And I've said it time and time again, and he goes at ADP 123, Ryan.
Okay.
I've said it. I see you squinting at the screen. I'm like, oh, I'll help you out here. But I've compared.
I was hoping you were going Austin Wells. Concerned about. No, yes, absolutely.
I've compared the two before, and I'd rather just take that ADP because one thing we talked about at the beginning: if you're taking catchers early, you need the four categories at least. the 223 average takes that out of the equation. Yeah. You're just done there. So I don't think that's ever going to, he's never going to be a 250 guy. If he is, I'll be, if he is, then the power disappears. It'll be like Yainer Diaz, essentially. That's what your shift will be. But all right, six catcher off the board. It's the Kings' older brother. Somehow it didn't become the King. It's, I don't follow lineage like that, but that's just what took place. I don't make the rules. Well, I guess I do on this one. But Wilson Contreras, ADP of 82. This has been a topic we've talked about, everyone has talked about, and we'll continue to talk about the entire draft season. Is Wilson is probably going to play a lot of first base, if not primary, like almost always at first base this year. That's the discussion point, because he's always getting nicked up, but he's getting hit by pitch a lot too. That's my argument, though. It's not always the catching part, but it's just weird. He's kind of fragile, some might say, right now. Projected for 246, 24 homers, 6 steals. He had 15 homers, 4 steals, hit 262 in only 84 games last year. He hasn't played more than 128 games since 2018. He's only done that once. That's a concern. But what's your thoughts on Wilson before I steal all the thunder on this?
No, I mean, that is the concern, is the lack of playing time. But as you know, if you listen to other podcasts out there, everyone is talking about that move to first base. Like I am quite confident that Wilson Contreras will get over 500 plate appearances unless these fluky injuries continue to keep happening. I don't even think he's that fragile. Like it was a broken forearm and a finger, like, whatever. I think the skills are fine with Wilson Contreras. The knock has been the lack of playing time, and I think, or not really lack of playing time, lack of plate appearances. I think that changes when you go to first base. And so if Wilson Contreras, I have bumped him up to like 575 plate appearances in my projections, and he comes out dead even with Cal Raleigh. And again, quite a bit below Salvador Perez. So it's really more, I think, a preference between Wilson Contreras, Cal Raleigh, if you want that power versus something more rounded, which is Wilson Contreras, his stat line, not Wilson himself. I'm sure he's in shape.
Yeah, he'll be just fine. But I'm with you. Like, I like Wilson. I like the idea of going to first base. Just because, like, it's always been like on a per game, per plate appearance type guy. He's been a fantasy stud. It's just a matter of getting the game. So hopefully, like you said, this gives him the games. And if so, I have him fifth as well. It'd be fun to see him play 140 plus games and see his stat line versus Adley. I'll be really honest. I think that's a very fun stat line to compare if they get to play like close to a full season type stuff. And that's the kind of, you know, maybe dumb gymnastics I play in my head trying to figure this stuff out. But if I'm waiting on picks or trying to justify not taking a guy or so on, these are the conversations I have to have to justify it. And I think Wilson is that good offensively to do it. And a healthy Wilson, I think, could push Adley. And then that's where that discussion continues to take place on why are we taking Adley third. Again, nothing personal, but just my thought process.
Do you worry, and just to kind of give all angles of this and somewhat devil's advocate, the Cardinals lineup, dude, could be atrocious. Yeah. Like, could be very atrocious next year. Especially compared to Baltimore, if we're comparing Adley to Wilson Contreras and my guy coming up next, Will Smith. It's rough. It looks very rough in St. Louis. I don't know what the runs in RBI will look like with Wilson Contreras this year.
I agree to the extent that it's rough, but like, in my mental gymnastics, I think Mason Wynn's a game changer leading off. Like, I think he'll be very good there. We've seen like with the Donovans and Burlesons and something, like, they'll at least get on base. I'm not saying they're going to do great. They're gonna get on base. Again, just trying to justify stuff. I love Yvonne Herrera.
I think he's a 314 OBP last year.
Yvonne Herrera is a stud. Like, I'm a fan of that. But yes, it's not a good offense. Baltimore, much, much better offense. I'm 100% with you on that one. So that is a definite devil advocate in the counting stats position, but average stolen bases and homers, Wilson can probably do the same, if not better, than Adley.
In batting order, he's going to hit third most likely. So that's another kind of vote for the playing time and plate appearances to get new highs.
That's a good point, though. A player that is on a very good offense, usually doesn't factor into his final stat lines of the year, but a very good offense.
All right. I'm cutting you off, man. No. All right. Will Smith. Before you degrade my guy here, right. So Will Smith with 75 plus RBI each of the last four seasons has averaged in the 70s for runs. So yes, that team context has paid off for Will Smith. Yes, he was bad for 4 months. He was awful for 4 months of last season. Started out excellent in April, finished somewhat strong in September, which I like to see. Basically 20 plus home runs each of the last four seasons as well. 19 in 2023. So if you're nitpicky, you can do that. But the batting average right at 260 each of the last four seasons as well. I think this is one of the most stable, even though the in-season stuff varied a ton last year. I think Will Smith is absolutely stable in one of the best lineups, plays a good amount, 540 plus plate appearances each of the last three seasons. I don't think the ceiling is anywhere near like an Adley, or I don't think the projection is anywhere near these top four that we've talked about. But I think Will Smith at an ADP of 93 is I think a pretty strong buy when you start to consider some of the deficiencies in the player pool that come after him. That's my Will Smith case. I'll see myself out now.
Now I want you to sit down and buckle up because I don't want you to fall over when I say this. I don't mind this ADP for Will Smith.
Whoa!
Arguments in the past was he was not a top five catcher where he was always going. His stat line is basically Wilson Contreras, maybe a little less than Wilson Contreras. So now he's in the right bubble of catchers. Like, he's in that world. You look at his playing time, you said, yeah, he gets the 540 plate appearances, but just like Wilson Contreras, he's never played over 138 games. It's always like 120 to 130 for the most part, which keeps him out of the elite conversation, which he was in, seemed like every offseason coming in. That was always my argument with Will Smith. He's not elite. He's very good. The great offense helps a ton. Like, if you stuck him in St. Louis, God forbid what his stat line would look like. But so in this regard, yes, I don't mind this ADP, because if we start talking the next few catchers, it gets real south real quick. So I get all of that. But he's finally moved back enough, and I can justify saying, okay, I might even have a share or two of Will Smith this year.
Whoa.
That's why I want you to sit down and take this in. Because as much as I like to make fun of the man, he's at least finally put in the category where he belongs, not elevated just because he's a Dodger where he shouldn't belong.
That's fair. I'm glad to see you kind of smarten up, wisen up in your old years. We can teach an old dog new tricks, I guess.
It's sound philosophy is the way I see it.
It's a good one, because wasn't Will Smith like a top three catcher?
Yeah, ADP that was ridiculous. Season? Like this time next year, watch me. Adley Rutschman will be like the seventh or eighth catcher. I'll be like, okay, that makes sense. Let's go with that. Maybe not be the same theory is what I'm trying to say. Like,
yeah,
move Adley down to five or six. And I'm like, okay, I could go cool. If Adley's pick 85, we're having a conversation. That kind of stuff. So it's
I came in ready to fire. I cut off your intro. I made my
I know, case, that's why I laughed. You're like, have you're fun, like, buddy. Have fun.
you're like, I agree with you. I'm like, oh, yeah. Damn.
So I said, sit down, because you're not going to believe what I'm about to say. But, I pulled the Pat McAfee on you on game day.
That's right. That's right.
I pulled the McAfee.
Singing the Georgia theme song and then picking Bama. I sent
you telling you how bad he was, shouldn't be on this team, and there you Heel go. But yes. Will Smith is a very good catcher at his ADP.
Now, and I would go ahead. Sorry.
Well, and most of my hate, I'll also say, but besides, he wasn't a top three guy in drafts last year, was the fact he was so bad you shouldn't be rostering him in a 12. Those are my arguments. It was never like he's not a good catcher. So I'm clarifying to those. I think I just perpetually hate Will Smith. I was more, he shouldn't be playing on your team, Will Smith. He shouldn't be drafted top three, Will Smith. That was my argument.
Better than Austin Wells, right?
Barely. and you know what's fun? I'd be willing. Okay, we might save this for another show. They're going 100 picks apart. I'd probably take Austin Wells at his ADP over Will Smith. But
yeah, that's for our catcher debate show.
We could have that debate later.
I'll come out firing on that one.
Yeah, so will I. The eighth catcher off the board, and this one, I love this catcher, but I'm having a lot of mental discussions, some tough moments here. That's Logan Ohapi. ADP is 118. Huge Ohapi fan, of course, but I think a healthy Ohapi is great. We got 136 games last year, 20 homers, 244. I've given the arguments, started the year good, middle of the season rough when he was kind of banged up. Last month, very good again. We've seen that for two straight years, though. The last month, very good again. We need that full thing. So part of me really likes Logan Ohapi because if he puts the full thing together, I think he's top five catcher. We just haven't seen it yet in 2 years. And they assigned Travis d'Arnaude, who will take some playing time, but not all the playing time. So that's a fair argument. So at an ADP of 118 with a projection of 238 and 19, Ryan, what are your thoughts on Logan Ohapi?
Yeah, I think there is a pretty firm plate appearance cap on Ohapi. I don't think you're getting that 600 plate appearances that like you can get from the top of the pool. So I think that is a strike against Ohapi compared to pretty much anyone going ahead of him. Now Ohapi is cheaper than Will Smith. I mean, there is a 25 pick gap. Yep. So two, three round gap. Right. Yep. So there is that, but it's the plate appearance cap. The batting average is like, we can't say what we said about Cal Raleigh and not apply that to Logan Ohapi. So, and I don't know if, well, maybe I'm wrong. I do think Ohapi has 30 home run power. He just hasn't realized it yet. So that could come. But again, with a plate appearance cap, it's hard to hit 30 home runs and 500 plate appearances, even if you do have plus power. And like, it was a 12% barrel rate for Ohapi, even in the bad second half. And I know you said he finished strong again. Even in that low second half, which was bad, especially it wasn't the power. It was a 13% barrel rate in the second half. So I think the power is great. It's the playing time cap and the batting average. This is like a Cal Raleigh light. And again, you're getting a 40 pick discount there compared to Cal Raleigh, but that's for a reason.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you get that discount. Now I will say this much, and we have a listener question on this later, so maybe I could save it, but played 136 games, 522 plate appearances last year, and some of those were banged up. Projection has him steamrolling for 108 games, 438. This is the argument I made when Travis d'Arnaude signed. Ohapi's still the primary dude. He's still going to play 130 games. Like, that's my thoughts. Travis has flat out said he's just there to back him up. Travis is better versus lefties than Ohapi is. I get it.
I think a straight platoon between the two. I don't think so. Seems like. You don't think so?
I think Travis is there to help. Because Travis was not even in a straight platoon in Atlanta until Murphy kept getting hurt. That was what it was. So Travis is there. He's got his old coach, I think his old bullpen or pitching coach there or something. He's got some pitchers he knows. He flat out, I could see actually Travis doing more DHing versus lefties than just straight catching. Like, I see more of that kind of situation. So I'm still on the optimistic side. I could be wrong, but from reading tea leaves, and tea leaves can obviously break and go away, I think Ohapi still has 130 games. So
that's what he could still do.
Keeps him in the top 10. Keeps him in the top. That, yeah, and that's where I've meant the part about the DHing. Like, there's still a world where Travis doesn't take his at-bats, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
So, all right. We'll see.
It's another interesting case of a young hitter who was truly awful against lefties last year. It was a 279 OBP. It was a 312 slug, like bad plate skills. But if you're the Angels, I don't think you just shut the book on Ohapi can't hit lefties and stop doing it. I think you still let him grow against southpaws. So we'll see how old Ron Washington plays it.
That's the – yeah, and I could be totally wrong because it is Ron Washington. But he screwed us on the mascot. He screwed us here too. All right. Cal Raleigh Light, the ninth catcher off the board. Here's the one I want to talk about. ADP of 123 is Shea Bangaliers. The dude is just a mashing machine. Played 135 games 2 years ago, 137 last year, which was great. 29 home runs last year. Somehow got 80 RBIs. Might be more impressive than 100 from Cal Raleigh being on the Oakland A's. Given the A's had a good run there for a while. Hit 224, which is a career high, says a lot. Batting average just dropped in three straight years, while the walk rate's gone up in three straight years. I think this is Cal Raleigh in a nutshell. This is why I would wait and take, if you want Raleigh's profile, you take Langoliers 53 picks later.
Yep, that's totally fair. I see the same power skills. I mean, what Raleigh does have in his corner is he's been doing this for 3 years, whereas... Right, Shea Langeliers, who is younger and hasn't had the chance to do this for 3 years, has just done it for one. But in the forecaster, we have an expected home run metric. That was 28 expected homers for Langeliers versus 29. Like, the power is legit. The ballpark, I don't think he brought up the ballpark. Ballpark will help, even though it is, I guess, neutral for Pacific Coast League standard. It's still better than what we saw in Oakland. So, yes, I am... 100% on board with you taking the kind of that cliche, why draft Cal Raleigh when you can draft him 40 picks later?
Yep, that's my theory. And then the 10th catcher off the board, it's is proper, maybe still too high of the sum, who knows. But the mighty has fallen, and JT Realmuto is now the 10th catcher off the board. ADP of 132 last year, 14 home runs, only 99 games, first time under 100 games since his rookie 2014 season when he played 11. 2020 played 47. He's been 100 or more every single season. So what's your thoughts on Realmuto? As it might be the end of a golden era, and this could give your argument to what your concerns are with Salvador at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, I can't sit here and praise JTR after what I just said about Salvador Perez. They are, well, I guess Salvi's 1 year older, but Realmuto, I mean, the interesting thing is, and this is where a projection can lead you wrong, he's projected for 7 steals. I think it's 2 or it's 20. And then kind of that midpoint is well, midpoint's 11, but you get my saying. I don't think it's going to be 7. I think JT Realmuto either snaps back. You could say that the stolen base rut that he was in last year was because he battled knee injuries and that led to July surgery. And just, you can say, okay, he's healthy now. He will go back to the mid-teen stolen bases that JT Realmuto has kind of always been. Or you say, oh, these are knee issues. He's 34. Are they going to go away? And will the Phillies just not run JTR like they did last year and get those 2 stolen bases? I think that's really the batting average home runs for Realmuto. I think we know what we're getting there. It's, do you trust the stolen bases to rebound or not? This is one guy where I am absolutely taking stock and watching what he does in spring training versus a lot more of these, especially for an established veteran. If JT Realmuto is out there running in spring training, I will probably draft him ahead of Ohapi and Langoliers. If he's not running, I will probably drop him behind Stevenson, some of these other guys we're going to talk about next.
No, that makes a ton of sense to me. I'm pretty much just passing on JTR. Could be totally wrong, all things considered, but there are a lot of lingering concerns, kind of how you mentioned. And he could, like you said, it's the gap of variance with him is so huge right now that I have a lot of questions in place. So I'm with you 100%.
And just looking at the projections to kind of play that game of like the Langoliers versus Cal Raleigh, JTR, if he does not run, is Keibert Ruiz, who's going 70 picks later.
We will talk about shortly for sure. So. Big fan coming up on this show. But any other thoughts on the top 10 here before we cherry pick some later picks?
No. So you've got that clear top 4. I think you've got kind of a mini tier next of Raleigh, Contreras, Will Smith, and then I see more deficiencies after that top 7 with Ohapi, Langoliers, Realmuto, but all can be productive for you and are much better than some of these next tiers we'll talk about.
Yeah, I'm with you here. So let's talk about the next tiers. We'll go 11 through 20. We'll each talk 2 guys here. You have, it's ADP's 142 to 263. Stevenson, Francisco Alvarez, Austin Wells, Gabby Moreno, Keibert Ruiz, Sean Murphy, Connor Wong, Ryan Jeffers, Ivan Herrera, and Joey Bart. So, Ryan, just for funs, we talked about how things change. What do you notice just in your bloom board from picks 11 through 20?
I see a big drop after Keibert Ruiz at 200, like I said, at the top. So you start to get a lot of red with that Sean Murphy, Connor Wong, Jeffers, Herrera, Bart tier. But even like 11 through 15, I don't know if I believe in Francisco Alvarez. I certainly don't believe in Austin Wells. And Gabriel Moreno can give you batting average, but no power. I don't even know how many guys. And you took the 2 guys I like I was late. So don't get to pick them. I like Stevenson and Ruiz quite a bit, but I don't really believe that much in Alvarez, Wells, Moreno, and then it gets ugly after that from a projection standpoint. So again, this is why I kind of said at the top, I think it is advantageous to get your 2 catchers before 200 here.
Yep, I'm with you. So with that being said, Ryan, why don't you kick us off with your first one to put here?
The first one I've got is Ryan Jeffers, who was admittedly your guy last year, at least in the first half. It looked like Jeffers was absolutely on pace to go like full Cal Raleigh and then kind of fell apart in the second half. 8 home runs, 217 batting average in the second half for Ryan Jeffers. But I think if you are waiting, I just like Jeffers more than the guys going around him. So it's a 233 ADP. That Sean Murphy, Connor Wong, Herrera, Bart. I think Jeffers is a step up from those guys. So if you're going to wait past 200 to grab even your second catcher, I think Jeffers is fine. The health history has not been great. He's never had. So last year was a career high in plate appearances for Ryan Jeffers at 465. He'd never had over 335 before that. And so maybe that's why we saw that second half swoon. Is he better conditioned now that he went through a full season? I don't know, but I at least think there's enough skill there for Ryan Jeffers to get into that top 15. And if he can make it through a full season, not wear down again in the second half.
Yeah, I've been really torn on a lot of my Jeffers stuff because first half was great. So it could be draft him and then play the waiver wire card if you want to go that route, if you see something change again. But at the same time, I kind of agree. Like, one reason I really liked him last year is it was finally his time to run, like with his plate appearances, to have his time. Yep. And you mentioned the boost. So it is his kind of catcher/DH role there. I think he's obviously where you're drafting him, you know he's going to be in somewhat of a platoon based on ADPs here. But he's one of the guys that can get you maybe 450 plus, 450 to 500 plate appearances, which at this point in the draft, very good. So you just got to be ready to pull the pin if things go south again.
Yeah. So, yep.
Big fan. All right. For me, my first one's Tyler Stevenson. I've been pounding this drum quite a bit already. I think we even talked about him on our ADP hitters situation there. I just like the ADP of 142. He's projected for 253, 16 and 2. But last year at 19 home runs, hit 258, 69, and 66. He's had at least 500 plate appearances, 515 plate appearances the last 2 years. Plate discipline's not bad for a catcher, which I'll take, but also, again, that 258 average. We saw 319 in 2022, 286 in 2021, 294 in a very small sample in 2020. But he's always projected as a pretty good batting average guy. It, to me, catcher, 250 or better, I'm going to take all day long. Mm-hmm. But he's got the upside to be much, much more. The hit tool a few years ago was like people were really, really hyped on what Tyler Stevenson could do at the position. I think the power is pretty legit as well. Like 9% barrel is the best since that small 2020. A 44% hard hit rate was the best. We saw improvements in that regard. Still has the ball on the ground a ton, which is a bummer, nearly a 48% ground ball rate. But that could help with the batting average. Kind of like we talked about Yiner. Like this could be a Yiner Diaz guy. In situation, might not get to the average, but I can see similar power with Stevenson, and the run production, especially in that ballpark, could be fun as well. So I'm a big Tyler Stevenson fan. I prefer him to be a catcher too, but I've had a couple teams where he's a catcher one.
Yeah, I just think a pretty decent bet to rebound what he did last year, at least close to it, which was that 258 batting average, 19 home runs, and it's really more so on Stevenson himself. But as I kind of mentioned earlier, I think it starts to get pretty ugly after him. And so just looking at the position as a whole, where you can kind of take that last guy coming, at the cliff, I think Stevenson is maybe that guy. Maybe it's Keibert Ruiz a little bit later, but it's a combination of liking Stevenson, but also not liking some of the options if you wait past him.
And just for people, I guess he's the 11th catcher off the board. Now I have him at 11 and I almost put him, or no, I have Tyler Stevenson 8th right now. So I'm very high on Tyler Stevenson. And again, these were early rankings and we've talked about on every show. We talk about rankings, a lot will change before heavy draft season. With that being said, I can't wait to hear the argument for Ryan's second catcher here. So who is your second catcher in this range, Ryan?
It's Austin Wells. It's not an argument for him. It's an argument against the guy.
I was like, how is this? Hey,
on the rundown, it says ADP 11 through 20, pick 2 to discuss. Doesn't necessarily say pick 2 that I like.
I watched the Santa Claus over Christmas. I got to read the fine print, apparently.
Read the fine print. I mean, from a projection standpoint, Austin Wells sticks out like a sore thumb, right? 231 batting average, but without the power, right? 16 home runs is what Steamer projects Austin Wells for. Maybe you don't agree with that, and I know that's fine. I could see Austin Wells going for more than 16 home runs, especially in that park. I just think all we've seen so far from Austin Wells is like 2 good months. And I know he's young. This is age 26 season. Like last year was his full season, first full season in the majors, still only 414 plate appearances. But I just don't think we've seen enough from Austin Wells when you consider, I'm taking Keibert Ruiz every single time over Austin Wells, who's going 8 picks later. So I'm not, and I'm taking Tyler Stevenson before him. So he sticks out as a bad projection even compared to Francisco Alvarez, Gabriel Moreno going, he's sandwiched in between those two guys. The projection just is not there. And maybe you say that he's young and the projection's a little bit too bearish on him, but it's just from what he's projected to do at the draft cost, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I agree and disagree at the same time, if that makes any sense. Like, I see the trepidation when it comes to Austin Wells. I also try to tell myself he's young. We saw the first month or so he was awesome, and then he just disappeared. Maybe when things got, you know, tougher with their, you know, pushing for playoffs, this, that, and the other, who knows. They still kept playing him, still kept running him out there. They traded Trevino, which I think is a boost to Wells getting the plate appearances. Like, this could easily be a 500-plus plate appearance guy, I think. They kept putting him in the middle of that order, even when he was struggling. Like, they want to make him work. They want to, like, they say you can't make fetch happen. They want to make Austin Wells work. So that's my optimistic side to, okay, let's roll with Austin Wells. Again, most of these catchers here, if they don't work, you play waiver wires. You could take your chances and move on. So I like Austin Wells. I do understand the concerns with Austin Wells as well.
Would you take Austin Wells over JTR straight up?
Yes, I would.
Wow.
I think JTR, we talked the variance. I'm just super concerned. And I know he was banged up a lot last year, but it's a knee. And he's a catcher, and he's old. And we used to love JTR because he runs. There's some serious concerns in that, and for me, at least. Again, could be wrong. I'll also take the 60 picks between the two.
So. Fair.
All right, my guy, you mentioned him, and I think we're both pretty much on the same page with this guy. Is Kyber Ruiz. Kyber, last year, 13 home runs, 3 steals, 229, played 127 games, but had an infection for weeks that made him lose like 30 pounds. And it took a while to get back to Kyber Ruiz numbers per se. But we saw a nice bounce back in September when he looked healthy at 277 over the month. Only one homer. He did have 8 homers the previous 2 months, which is kind of ironic in the situation. But Kyber's never been a massive power guy. Like, we're hoping someday he cracks into that 15 to 20 home run range, which I think is his wheelhouse. Like, he had 18 the year before. I guess some want him to be more than that. I don't think we ever will. What Kyber does, and similar to my Stevenson discussion, he is not going to crush you in batting average unless he gets an infection. Let's put it that way.
Right.
He is like bolstered into mid 250s to 265. And that's something that's outstanding at pick 203 at the catcher position. And if he can get you 15 to 20 homers, a few steals, hits in the middle of it, I think a Washington lineup is actually better than maybe some people give credit. They're young, and they're gonna do more than people, more good than bad. Let's put it that way. I think, like, they'll be much better than the Mariners offense. I'll say that right now. I feel that way, at least. Maybe I'm too optimistic, but I like Kyber a lot. ADP at 203, preferably as your catcher too, though, because like we said, things get real bad real quick. But I think he's a phenomenal just floor play. With there could still be a ceiling with this guy because the hype was there. He's going to be 26 this year, so he's still young. There could be more to Kyber Ruiz.
I feel like he's older than that, but that's surprising how young he still is for someone that, at least in my mind, is like this established veteran catcher. I think projection, I think you have to throw out what we saw in the first half from Kyber Ruiz last season, and I don't think a projection system is trained to do that. So I think I'm more bearish on, or no, bullish, right? Bullish on the bullish. I think he's going to hit over 15 home runs in the projection. Awesome. And with Kyber Ruiz, like, it is the playing time. And this is someone who had 560 plate appearances in 2023. Even with this nasty illness that you talked about, still had 485 plate appearances, which is more than I think a lot of the catchers going around him right now. So if you get a full season of a healthy Kyber Ruiz, he is one of those few who can pile up those 550 plus plate appearances. And again, you're getting him at pick 200. So like, I think Ruiz from like a ranking standpoint is similar to like a Langelier, Stevenson, JTR, but going 70 picks later. Like, that's a lot.
So. Yeah. He's very similar to JTR. That's a very fair comp, honestly. So I'm with you on that one. All right. 21 and beyond. Like, you and I picked some guys, even though I'm on this board, because it is It is rare steak.
Horrendous.
It is rare steak red up in this place. A couple greens, but not a whole lot. With Kirk, Naylor, Patrick Bailey, Heim, Danny Jansen, Goodman, Freddie Fermin, Dalton Rushing, crack in the top 30. Luis Campusano, who finished the year in AAA, so I'm still confused on that one. I guess it's the only catcher they have for now. And Kyle Higashioka. So, Ryan, I'm not going to ask your opinion on that section because, good Lord. Who's your first, I guess, set of catchers you want to talk about after pick 21?
Yep. And that, I mean, that's the takeaway we want to keep hammering home here is this is why we want to get those early catchers, because that crew that you just rattled off, none of them projected for more than 15 home runs. The only one that's close is Hunter Goodman and Bo Naylor, Danny Jansen. Jansen, I like. You'll talk about him in just a sec. And there's playing time concerns with all of them. So, like, I just think the difference in production between this 21 through 30 group is leaps and bounds below the guys that we've talked about already in this episode. So I think you just, and especially in draft and holds, but this also applies to fab leagues as well when they get called up. There's definitely a few interesting rookies this season. And rookie catchers, you have no idea. It's a big adjustment to not only hitting in the majors, but also handling a major league pitching staff. You do have Dalton Rushing that you mentioned, Bubba, at a 458 ADP, maybe play some outfield and gets his plate appearances that way. But I think even deeper in drafts, there's Edgar Caro in Chicago. There's only Corey Lee blocking Edgar Caro. And then there is Agustin Ramirez.
I like that one a lot.
For Miami. Thank you. Both of those guys probably don't start on opening day, but I'm fairly confident at some point in the first half they will be at least up, if not primary catchers. And those two guys are going at ADPs 598 and 650. So they are basically free in drafts. The minor league numbers last year for both of them just jump off the page. Ramirez can even steal some. So you've got that. And again, I think that's the case for, and if you're in a fab league, I can see these guys coming up pretty soon and being a factor. And in draft and holds, if you're taking them as your third or fourth catcher, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, I have Agustin Ramirez actually as my number 30 in our rankings right now. There's no reason that he shouldn't be playing over Fortes except for playing time control. That's all. That's the only reason why he's better than I don't know the defensive metrics, but when I look at Ryan's minor league data leaderboard sheet thing.
That was better.
Yeah, I'm gonna make fun of myself every time I talk about one of these. Yeah, like Ryan said, these things pop off the page. So Agustin, he's awesome. A big fan there, and I like Cuero too, because I am a little more optimistic on Corey Lee than some. Last year was bad. I'm not gonna deny it.
It was.
It was really bad. I think, like we saw, I had more hype or excitement for him with his minor league numbers, and last year did not work, but the team's so bad they keep running him out there. Eventually, Caro should get a shot too. So I'm with you on both these guys. Good, two good specs if you're in that kind of game.
And I'd rank him. Ramirez, yeah, then Caro.
100%.
If you're trying to pick.
For me as well. I think, yeah, outside of playing time manipulation, Ramirez, like I said, should be starting with the team. But and one of my things is I usually take in my DCs three catchers inside the top like 20. I need to stop taking that third one so quick and just wait on one of these young guys. That's one of
we got deliveries. We got deliveries. So that's life of podcasting during the day.
Yeah, sorry about that. All right, so I'll give my my first one here.
I can go my second one.
All right, my first catcher in the 21 through 30 realm. I'm going to go with Danny Jansen, Ryan. I'm actually – I think we're all usually excited about Danny Jansen, and then we always go, well, for the 60 games or so we're going to see. Did play 94 last year. It was nice. Only 9 home runs, 206 average. I think he was more hurt than we led on to potentially. But this is a guy that we know has the 15 – I think he's got even more than that, just been on limited samples. Like, it's the old joke with like Jazz Chisholm with Danny Jansen. If you can give me 120 plus games, Danny Jansen, we're talking easy 20 plus home run dude. Batting average is always a concern, but the skill set is great. He should get every chance he has to be the guy in Tampa until he probably gets hurt, unfortunately. But the reason I like this is an ADP of 330. So even in a fab league, you can take him with one of your last picks. when, if he gets hurt, you drop him and you move on. But for the chance that he continues to go and play 100-plus, 120-plus games, I think it's worth every penny with Dan Jansen.
Yeah, if you run into – and even in Fably, like you get the good Danny Jansen when he's healthy. And yep. So I would – you know, you don't have to – you're not stuck with him for the full season. And, yes, I like him more than Heim, Bailey, Naylor, Kirk, Bart. I'll probably stop at Herrera, all going ahead of him at catcher. So I agree. He's one of the few that I actually like on this right side of the screen.
Yeah, I'm optimistic, maybe overly, but we're kind of in the same boat there. All right, who's your second guy here? Because I totally get it, because I had a ton of him last year.
It's Miguel Amaya. I just think someone who is dirt cheap and has the job and has some skills. And the forecaster, we put an upside of 20 home runs, 260 batting average on Miguel Amaya, age 26 season. Like, there, you can squint and see some growth there for Miguel Amaya. And again, I think is the primary catcher. Carson Kelly, I believe, was signed by the Cubs. I don't think Carson Kelly is the primary guy there. So I think it's Amaya. If you wait on catcher to get that second catcher with playing time and some skill, I think it's a good enough blend. I'm not calling for any kind of major breakout or anything from Miguel Amaya, but I think he can be serviceable as a second catcher, which is more than I can say for a lot of these other guys.
100%. Barring them actually giving Ballesteros a call-up, which I think the signing of Kelly obviously derailed for the time being.
Yeah.
And in my theory, it worked this way with Austin Wells, even Corey Lee, even though it was a bad season. But these young catchers, don't call them up unless you are going to play them. Like, don't. And my next guy will be an example of that as well. So Ballesteros, as much as I like him, the signing of Kelly basically says, if we see Ballesteros, it's super late. Thus, to your point, Amaya should get all the run. Like, my concern was a good spring from Ballesteros could have taken the job from Amaya. That, to me, is out of the question. So I'm with you on Amaya as a late pick and seeing where that goes for sure. Yep. For me, it's Adrian Del Castillo. And this is a guy that I don't have ranked yet, and I will. When we update our catcher's ranking, that I will, because since we've done these, we did the rankings weeks ago for catcher. They're the first ones that came out. So a lot has changed in my mind and researching, so on and so forth. Adrian Del Castillo, I love. People should know that if they listen to the show enough. Was on him the second he got called up. He had four homers, hit .313 over 25 games, 87 plate appearances with the D-backs last year, hit .312 with 26 homers over 474 plate appearances at AAA last year, has always showcased a good batting average. And one thing I like projections be damned here. They have him at 36 games. He's one injury away from Gabby Moreno from taking over the role again, which we loved. But the thing that changed my mind, grain of salt, but the powers to be said they love his bat and they want him in the lineup as much as they can, either via DH or at catcher. So they want to utilize Adrian Del Castillo. Again, grain of salt, like, believe what you want. You can only get a catcher to DH so often. You don't see a lot of teams being successful in that regard. So I get all that. But the fact that it's not so much he's going to have to get called up, that he's already going to potentially be on the active roster. So that could change if spring training goes south. But if he's up there on the active roster, now he's DHing and he's potentially catching, this could be your Atlanta version of Travis d'Arnaud, or even what you might get in Anaheim. He might get 80 to 100 games if Del Castillo, even if Moreno stays healthy, which I think is productive at his ADP late in the game. And he's one injury away from being, I think, a top 20 catcher pretty easily in my book. So I love Adrian Del Castillo's skill set. It's just a playing time question. And with the rumblings that they want to get him in the lineup, means he might make the opening day roster, which obviously boosts him tremendously in my opinion.
Yeah, that was going to be my biggest pushback, is the playing time. As much as you can push back where Adrian Del Castillo is going, so I get it. But yeah, if he can catch twice a week and DH twice a week or something, and that's worst case if there's no injuries, there's enough there.
ADP of 421. So not as low as your two prospect guys, but it's probably only because Del Castillo's slightly proven it. They have not yet, but that's like the only difference I would give on that. I honestly, if we want to talk Caro, Ramirez, and Del Castillo, I still like Del Castillo better because I think he's opening day roster, but I am a very big fan of Augustin Ramirez. Like, I really think there's a lot to like on that one. And I know I talked to our buddy Martin Sokolsky in Arizona, and he gave me a list of prospects to look into more, and both of those guys were on there. I think Augustine's got a really nice path to playing time for sure.
I would take Del Castillo over both. And if I'm citing the minor league leaderboards tool that's available to our Patreon folks, our Sheets thing, Adrian Del Castillo, it has Statcast data for AAA guys. And Adrian Del Castillo Statcast data, I will just say, pops off the page. It's some of the best raw power that we saw in AAA last year. So
like, yeah, Del Castillo to me is one of those, if you're in a fab, a 30 round fab draft, he's such a great like late pick if you're trying to play a game. You don't want a bench catcher, I get it, but if you want to try to play the game, if you're drafting early, and that means the fab market will be better for you, Del Castillo is a fun late pick.
Yeah,
to see how it pans out. All right, final thoughts on the position, Ryan. I know we kind of banged the take, be aggressive, go early a lot. Final thoughts here.
Sometimes I have my preconceived notions before the podcast, and we talk through these guys, and sometimes it changes by the end of the show for me. Does not change for me with catchers. So I'm just gonna repeat myself one last time and say try and get those two in the top 200, because it falls apart very quickly with 15 through 30 and beyond at the position.
All righty. I'm with you. I could just echo what you said. Just be aggressive. Yeah. I'm going to do some more, and I'll talk about it in the Discord and play on the show, is I'm going to do some early catcher attempts and see how I feel about that, to try to see if that mindset continues to, I'll use Ryan's, draft tracker and have an idea on how that pencils out when all things are said and done type stuff. So it'll help a lot. All right. We've got some listener questions from the Discord here, and these guys, man, on short notice came in with a flurry. This was beautiful. I'll start with Martin Sokolsky. Ryan, is Bo Naylor ever going to figure it out? We'll start there, and we'll go to his second part of his question.
I mean, it was terrible last year for Bo Naylor, right? 201, 13 home runs, like 6 stolen bases. But yes, I think Bo Naylor could absolutely figure it out. I think this is someone, I mean, neither of us talked about him. I don't think Bo Naylor is getting talked about at all. And if you go back 1 year, this was one of the hottest names at the position.
I was all in. Yeah.
You were all in. I was very much in. Bo Naylor, this is his age 25 season. So if you are just kind of banking on that, you know, last year's bums type of deal with Bo Naylor, who's certainly young enough to turn this around. Yeah, I think this is someone who where's he at on our sheet here? He's going between Alejandro Kirk and Patrick Bailey. I would take Bo Naylor over both of those guys. I still take Jansen over Naylor, but I think Bo Naylor, like, is not being talked about anymore because he had one bad season. Maybe that's who he is, right? We don't know, but he has shown better and is young enough to turn that around.
I'll say this much with Bo Naylor, the batting average is in question right now. I think he showed great batting average skills in the minors, has not translated to the bigs, but in the pocket of ADP he's going in, he's got more power and speed than pretty much all of them.
Could lead the position in stolen bases, honestly.
He's one of the few, like, if you walked in and said Bo Naylor is going to get double-digit steals, I wouldn't even really put up much of an argument. Because the thing that really stood out is he played 138 games. I have his page right here. 123, sorry. 389 plate appearances. But that was with struggles and, like, David Fry and other guys in the way. Fry's not catching this year. They brought Austin Hedges back. He's strictly there to help as a defensive catcher. He's not going to steal it. He'll play, but he's not a detriment. Like Naylor, if he can figure even a little bit out, he's going to play in 130 plus games. And that it's a great call. It's something not talked about nearly enough these days. That could, you know, he's the 15th, 20th, he's 22nd catcher off the board right now. He could easily be right outside the top 15. I don't know if I'm going to push him in the top 15 just yet, but he can move up that chart pretty quickly. So, yeah, it's a good call. Good call by Martin. Martin's other question is, no love for Dalton rushing. He's talking about the projections, I think, because you showed the board of a 231, one homer, zero steals. I think it's because it's hard for his playing time.
Yeah, that's got to be all playing time. Got to be all playing time. So.
And it's weird with rushing because we all know he's an amazing talent, but you do have Will Smith in front of him. They got Austin Barnes back because they love him just to back up Will Smith, kind of do the Austin Hedges thing. So it's tough to see. Like, they are working rushing out in the outfield, but the outfield's pretty full, especially if they go sign Teoscar. It's like, where does Dalton play? It's not that there's no love for Dalton. It's where's the bats going to come from for Dalton rushing? I think he's better in a trade potentially.
And what you were saying before, if you've got a catcher prospect, you don't want to call him up and not play him. I don't know if that's, maybe the Dodgers don't believe in rushing as a catcher long term. I don't know. But yes, there certainly are obstacles to Dalton Rushen's playing time. I would not want to lean on him as a catcher too.
Yeah, and that's, and sorry, I meant to highlight that with the Del Castillo talk is, whenever Gabby came back, they always sent Del Castillo back to AAA. They didn't use him as the bench catcher. They wanted him continuing to get at bats. That's what you want with a prospect. So there was that.
Yep.
All right, next question we have here is from TDK90MIN in the chat. Would you draft the three St. Louis catchers in a DC and call it a good call it good on catcher at bats, not draft the fourth and feel good about getting an extra spec pick and enough catcher at bats? How many second half at bats? Oh, we'll get to that question in a minute. So on the three catcher St. Louis thing, I've seen this a lot because you can go Wilson, he's gonna play first, but he's a catcher. And then it's Ivan Herrera and Pedro Pajes is who he's talking about, who's not on this top 30. How would you go about that, Ryan? Because I have my thoughts.
I'm interested in your thoughts. I think it's fine. I think Pedro Pajes, he's more defensively minded than Ivan Herrera. So I don't know. I think it's fine to take the top two. I'd probably shoot somewhere else with someone with more offensive skill than Pedro Pajes as my third catcher. But outside of that, I think you're fine going Herrera and Wilson Contreras and starting both of those guys at catcher.
Yeah, we're pretty much on the same page. So like Pajes, he had his moments last year that were interesting, but he's mainly there for defense. Herrera's mainly there for offense. Like I've said many times, Pajes would catch and Herrera DH because they wanted Herrera's bat in there. They wanted the defense of Pajes because that's the Cardinals' way. But I would not want to roster all three because I think Pajes will be more of a dead spot than a good thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yep.
TDK's other question is, how many second half at bats will Drake Baldwin get? For those curious, Drake Baldwin is a great catching prospect for the Braves. Sean Murphy's in the way. It goes back to our they want to bring up a catcher to actually play situation. So if Murphy gets hurt again, it's Baldwin's world. I think he jumps over the backup catching situation, but it's really tough to predict.
Yeah, it's very tough because, I mean, I do agree. It depends on a Sean Murphy injury, and that absolutely has happened before. Who's the backup catcher? Chadwick Tromp? Like
that's what it was before. I'll check right now. They've been had some moving and shaking in Atlanta this offseason.
I feel like that's a placeholder. So Drake Baldwin, yeah. You're betting on injury, but yeah, I think could be in the second half, could be the primary catcher if there is an injury to Sean Murphy. If Murphy stays healthy, I think there's a decent chance Atlanta keeps Baldwin in the minors. So what you said, I don't think they should bring up Baldwin for him to be the second catcher.
Agreed. And our buddy Chris Clegg, he's a Braves guy, plus a major prospect dude. He likes Baldwin a lot. The skills are there. It's just, the playing time. A lot of good catching prospects these days, so he's got to get the playing time. Our buddy John Wilder says, I'm tired of drafting a catcher with a .230 average and under 20 home runs. Just not worth the sinkhole. Give me Moreno and Kirk over their ADP all day. So he likes Moreno and Kirk for the batting average, but obviously not the power if he wants. Oh, so he doesn't want the 230, 20 home run guy. He wants the average catcher, which I get kind of our conversation, but go earlier and get both.
Yeah, exactly. Correct. If you're that annoyed by it, go early and get him. And I guess don't take Cal Raleigh, John, if you're sick of that line, which is fine. Fair, so fair. I personally want to get power at catcher, like with Kirk and Moreno. They're both projected for 11 home runs. Like that can really sink you. But it's all how you build a team. So you're certainly viable to go batting average first and then get power elsewhere.
Everybody, Scott Burke says, my question for Ryan, if the show is about catchers, why do you need to be there?
Hey man, I'm just happy. I convinced you on Will Smith. So my job here, my work here is done.
You've done plenty on this show. So you're good. Ben Bingham says, what is your favorite catcher strategy so far? In other words, what does your catching situation look like? I know I want to try other strategies, but it's mainly been get at least two out of the top 15 for the most part.
Yep. And in a fab league, I am willing to veer from that. I have not done any fab leagues yet since it's only January, but I'm willing to only take one in a fab league, but in a draft and hold. I'm taking two in that top 200.
And then another reason why I want to do my strategy, because again, it's not fab, but in a fab, I'd be really interested in taking like one of the top, you know, three or four that I like, and then just waiting and on like going Danny Jansen or something, Ivan Herrera playing the game and seeing where it goes there and not being as aggressive, but getting an elite one to anchor down one spot really good and going from there.
Yep.
All right. And the last question we have here is our buddy Lucas Beery says pick one or more for Bubba. catchers you like, the catcher you guys like more than projections and why?
I will go Kiber Ruiz for the fact that we can throw out his first half.
I will agree with you on that. I think there's that. I guess Tyler Stevenson would be my guy. I'll be different. I'll say
Del Castillo. I mean, you said the playing time with Del Castillo. You don't believe
Castillo
in
for
the
sure.
Playing time projection.
Let me pull up this guy's page before I speak way out of school. But I was trying to pick one on our top 30 where Del Castillo would be a playing time one for sure. I'll say Ivan Herrera. That's what I want to bring up, and a guy that I might need to boost more. They have him for 92 games, 362, 9 homers, 258 average. Like, this is a dude last year, 301 average, 5-5, 5 homers and 5 steals. So kind of a sneaky steals guy in 72 games. If he takes over that role, and this is the if, because we're believing Contreras plays, I'm trying to tell myself 120, 130 games at first, if not more. In a perfect world, he should just be the first baseman. Just put him over there. The question is, what is Pedro Páez conundrum? Where does that play in? Yeah. If Ivan Herrera becomes the catcher one, this projection is way low. Like, we're talking, in my mind, closer to 15 homers and maybe 10 steals, if not more. Like, I think there's a lot to like with Ivan Herrera, which boosts him aggressively up the rankings here. And that's something I need to maybe adjust. It just comes down to how comfortable am I believing he gets the role. But to Lucas's question, on this top 30, I'll go Ivan Herrera as the guy that does not have the proper projections. Because even to me, 92 is too low if Wilson plays every day. But I don't know if I can give him like 135 yet either.
Right. So that's probably a leap too far at this point, but we'll see in spring.
But that could be a guy that, if you want to be aggressive now, could pay off in a big way. Yep. Big ifs.
Yep.
All right, Ryan, we're going to wrap it up there. Episode 201 in the books. We gave our final thoughts on the position. Any final thoughts before we head on out of here for another weekend?
Nah, thanks for making it this far. Join the listener league and do the auction version of this and how we would attack catchers, which would be like $215 guys, maybe, if we're talking auctions. But fun breakdown. We will do first base coming up Tuesday night. Tuesday. So
first base, second base, and around the diamond.
Things are heating up. I always love when it changes to the new year in fantasy baseball. We see it every season. Fantasy baseball is back in the spotlight and we see everything kind of pick up. So I'm excited, my friend.
Yep. It's a great time of the year. Lots coming your way here at the Bubba and Bloom pod as always. So check it all out. Check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm on Twitter at BDIntric. This was Bubba and the Bloom episode 201. Catch y'all next time.